This is the Change Management Podcast by the University of South Wales. My name is Mark Jackson, Director of South Wales Business School and Co-Director of the Intensive Learning Academy for Leading Digital Transformation at the University. In Season 4, we're exploring the concept of digital transformation, how it can be applied to organisations and how it works in practice. We discuss how digital transformation can help any organisation become a more agile one. In this episode, we'll be exploring digital health and medtech, learning from the pandemic response and the future of digital health strategy for Wales. Welcome to our guest, Ivan Evans, Executive Director of Strategy at Digital Health and Care Wales, and previously Director of Digital Technology and Transformation at Welsh Government.
Hi, Mark.
Thank you for joining us today. Our first question is really about digital transformation. I'm really conscious that digital is a really broad term. It can mean lots of things to different people according to different sectors and different experiences. So let's start off with, what does digital mean to you?
Yeah, I think, as you say, it covers all sorts of different preferences. I tend to think in terms of digital and data. I know these things are interconnected, but there's a very close relationship between them. For me, it would encompass all the embedded technologies that we have in devices and medical technology and things like that. But mainly, it's the software and the hardware and the infrastructure that delivers all of the key digital services that we have across the NHS in Wales. And then the data which underlies all of those things. And, you know, if you zoom out even more, I think it's, and I would say this given my role, obviously, but I think it's going to be the defining characteristic of the future of healthcare. It is the one thing that we really need to double down on in order to get out of the position that we're in. You know, we need to bring digital and other technologies to bear to help us with the recovery post the COVID pandemic, because it takes a long time and a lot of training to train people up. So we have to find alternatives where we can help people to work better, and digital is the tool that we use to do that.
So just to expand, is that purely about investment in technology, or is that a cultural shift as well? Is that about behavior? Is it about infrastructure, or purely about the driving things?
Well, yeah, I'd say from my perspective, I take a fairly technical perspective on these things. Digital Health and Care Wales is the national digital services delivery organisation for the NHS in Wales. My main sort of focus in terms of strategic planning is the product range that we have, the portfolio of transformation programmes that are specific to a particular digital service, the workforce, the professional digital workforce, if you like, the technical professional digital workforce that supports all of that activity and does the development side of it. I'm very conscious of the need for digital literacy across the whole workforce. NHS Wales, at the strategic level, has a workforce strategy. One of its chapters is about a digital-ready workforce. That work, though, is not led primarily from Digital Health and Care Wales. It's led from Health Education and Improvement Wales. And I think that's right, because it needs to be a part of everybody's job to be confident with digital tools. And increasingly, as we look ahead, being able to handle data and information derived from data and insights derived from that, I think is going to be a core skill for everybody working in healthcare. But my main focus is on the sort of more technical, more development, more service delivery side of digital, I would say.
And in that context then, what can we start to do in Wales to start to embrace working more digitally?
Yeah, I think there's a lot which is going on already in Wales. I'm speaking mainly from the health and social care perspective. I think there is an appetite to embrace digital. People are generally enthusiasts for the latest bright and shiny kit. Doctors, they love their Apple Watches and they love their smartphones and they love their tablets. And as long as you can give them an attractive interface and a service that does for them what they need, then as consumers, as the public, as well as professionals, people are quite willing to embrace. I think it's one of the lessons, or one of the learnings from the COVID experience, is how quickly and rapidly people have been willing to change the way they work, to use, you know, video conferencing and Teams and, you know, other online tools, which, you know, we might 2 or 3 years ago have thought would be quite a challenge. But in fact, people switched within weeks, literally within weeks, to a whole different way of working.
And is that sustainable, do you think, that level of, I guess from my perspective, what we're seeing within education is a shift, and a shift and a paradigm shift. Whether it's sustainable or it's comparative to a physical experience, we're moving into a very different world that we're starting to explore, that combines the best of both online, digital, and on campus. Are there synergies within other sectors, such as health, do you think?
Yeah, I think that we're not going to be as purely online as we've been in the past. So as an example, working for Welsh Government before coming to Digital Health and Care Wales, the last 2 years of my time in Welsh Government was all from home, all virtually, and probably only went into the office a dozen times in those 2 years. There were people in my team who I'd never met face-to-face and had been working for months and months in the team. I think there's real challenges for organizations about how to move back to hybrid working. Having half your team in the room and half of them on video is a very, very difficult, quite awkward thing to do. It's quite binary. And I think that organizations in general will move to more targeted ways of being selective about when to try to bring everybody together physically and when not to. And I think, you know, the conference industry is starting to navigate what that is, you know, inline and virtual, you know, in-person and online conferences at the same time. How do you navigate that? So it's going to take a bit of time to work through. For clinical care, I think we're going to go back to face-to-face. You know, health is an in-person thing, the human contact. We used video consultation a lot, you know, during the early days of the pandemic particularly, and it has its uses, especially for checkups and for certain ailments. But I don't think we're going to see a wholesale shift to video consultation. You know, there is still a real value to the face-to-face clinical practice, and we'll shift back. Well, we already have shifted back very much to face-to-face clinical practice and care.
Is there somewhere then that's a balance between the two? Were there any tangible differences in terms of demographics and people's responses to a digital technology during the pandemic?
Well, again, I think this, you know, it comes down to what you mean by digital. So on the video consultation, for example, there's a questionnaire at the end of every one. We've done more than 250,000 video consultation episodes over the last couple of years. And there's an opportunity for both the clinician and for the patient to fill out a survey questionnaire at the end. The research was somewhat unexpected in that it demonstrated that there was no difference in terms of socioeconomic background or demography or age or anything else about the levels of satisfaction, very high levels of satisfaction, 90% plus, but they were not distinguished by certain groupings or certain types of people, which was a slightly unexpected outcome because people, you know, digital inclusion is something we put a lot of effort into in Wales. And historically, there's been a differential access to healthcare services from different socioeconomic groups across Wales and different outcomes because of that. But for video consultation, it's appreciated pretty much equally across the span is the evidence that we have at the minute, for different reasons, perhaps to do with convenience or to do with the inconvenience of public transport or the working day or whatever else it is. But it doesn't matter because everybody seems to like it to the same extent. And then for some of the other digital technologies that we have, digital COVID passes, for example, embraced at unprecedented levels. There are over 1 million people in Wales out of a population of 3.2 million who've logged in and now have an NHS login account because they've downloaded a digital COVID pass. So there are astounding levels of adoption in a very, very short period of time.
And is that driven by the fear of the context at that time, or would that have been different in another situation, do you think?
I don't think it's driven by fear. I think it's driven by, you know, need, because you needed to get the COVID pass, didn't you? So there was a requirement to get the COVID pass. And in England particularly, that was used in a very tactical way to encourage people to download the NHS app that exists in England.
I meant fear, not of digital, but fear in terms of the context of the initial versions of the app that were working with, in the context of whether you've been exposed to people with the virus, and that there's that kind of motivator in that context, or whether it's a fear of digital technology. It can be combinations of both. The extraordinary success of it is really positive now, isn't it? In hindsight, it brings with it a whole range of different kind of challenges at the time. And I remember endless conversations in the media about the ethics of lots of those kind of things. But it was there was a necessity around things at the time that made it a success and evidence of a progress within digital culture and digital technology.
Yeah, well, I think there's necessity and there's convenience, definitely. And there was a lot invested in making things like the test booking services simple and straightforward as possible, making it relatively straightforward and using digital technologies to download the NHS COVID pass that you needed for entry into, you know, venues and various other things. I think it was the way that public health regulations and governments were legislating around those and the requirements that governments were introducing that was driving the adoption, really, linked to digital being the most convenient way for people to get the tests that they required or to get the COVID pass that they needed. If governments hadn't been legislating, then I don't think people would have downloaded to the extent that they did because they were afraid of catching COVID. It was because there were things that people needed to do and digital was the easiest way to do them.
And in terms of the key digital learnings now in hindsight, what else have we learned from the pandemic?
Well, I think we've learned an awful lot. For me, the really high level strategic perspective is that the benefits of digital in response to the COVID pandemic, they're really obvious in retrospect. So, you know, imagine that somebody had turned up in mid-2020 and said, let's turn the national vaccine delivery platform in Wales off. Then people would say, well, you can't do that because it's essential, because we absolutely have to have that vaccine platform. And it's enabled Wales to deliver some of the fastest vaccine rollout anywhere in the world. If we'd taken the traditional approach, somebody somewhere would have come up with a proposal for a digital platform for vaccine delivery. Then we would have done a business case around it. And then we would have predicted what the benefits might have been. And then we would have done a return on investment exercise. And then we would have considered what the risks were. And then we would have looked at alternative scenarios, including a do nothing option and all the rest of it. Then it might have been quite difficult to get that across the line. And I think that's been a barrier to digital in the past. I'm of the view that a significant investment in digital and an effective use of digital is non-negotiable for really any modern service delivery, but particularly health and social care delivery. And senior leaders need to have the confidence and the conviction that digital is just something that we have to do. Just as we know we need ambulances and we need hospitals, well, we need digital. And I think that is the COVID experience has been an important example there of how things are really, really obviously valuable and worthwhile in retrospect, but we would have struggled with our ordinary tools to have justified it in advance. I think we've also learned a few other things about the benefits of delivering single platforms from the cloud on an all Wales basis quite quickly. I think we've learned a lot about a rapid, agile delivery cycle, making it easier to make decisions, because it's quite hard to forecast what the potential outcomes might be 5 years in the future. And that leads you to mitigating against a lot of different risks and also hedging some of the decisions that you need to make. But when you're developing on a 5 week cycle, then the decisions become crisper and that enables you to go more quickly. And I think we've also learned a lot about how to deploy and train people by using simple products and then using webinars with often hundreds of people on the call and the expert, whether they're public health experts, you know, health security, or whether they are the developers themselves on the call, taking feedback in real time from the users as they're being trained and then playing that back into the development cycle. That is a far better way than developing something in isolation, then rolling it out in a phased way, and then using floor walkers over a period of 6 months to support people. You know, you get a better product and you get it much, much more quickly. And people can go back and review the webinar again, like a YouTube video, and, you know, if they've missed anything or if they can't do it at that time. And that enabled us to onboard 2,500 people onto the contact tracing platform in a fortnight. It's really impressive.
Yeah, really fantastic. So, and that's a real kind of shift in cultural change, isn't it, really, in terms of adopting to that iterative process. So in the context of current leaders and managers who are looking to transform their own organizations, whether it's in health or other sectors, what do you think are the key challenges that they'll face in making those decisions and those opportunities for transformational change?
Yeah, I think it's at what level your leadership is.
Of course.
So if you're the leader of a digital team or a digital product, then your challenge is getting the senior level buy-in that you need, getting your finance director to support and endorse the things that you're doing. If you're the chief executive and you want to push hard on digital, then your challenge is finding the time and finding your own digital literacy and confidence to be able to effectively champion digital in your own organization, because digital is not part of the core set of a lot of senior leaders, not in the same way as finance, for example, or some of the other things. You know, lots of, you know, chief executives are very comfortable in a financial environment. They're held to account on finance in a way that they're not on digital, and that makes them more confident advocates within their own organization. So there's some challenges there. But I think, you know, for leaders generally, the two challenges really are, one, talent is the biggest challenge. The workforce that we need, the skills that we need within the workforce. Digital skills evolve quite quickly. I feel like the sort of skills cycle and the technology cycle in digital moves quite rapidly. So you constantly need to refresh your skill set. Everybody wants to do digital in every sector at the moment. So there's an enormous competition for quite a limited talent pool. So it's very, very competitive, and it's very, very difficult to recruit into Wales and into organizations. And sometimes we're not market facing in terms of the salary and reward that we can offer from public sector organizations compared to what the commercial and private sector will offer, because, you know, there's a real buzz around digital at the moment. And then money is the second thing. Money is a challenge because the way that we allocate money in the public sector is usually around business casing. It's usually around time-limited programs. It's sometimes it's for a year at a time. And very often, historically, in digital, it's been quite capital-oriented. You know, you purchase the software, you purchase the equipment. All those things are changing. You know, as you move to cloud services and subscription-based services, then you shift from capital to revenue. But if you're using product-led approaches and if you're using agile software, but you haven't got a specification that you're working to in a traditional waterfall program delivery, you've got a sort of a continuing iterative cycle that just goes on, and there's no end to it. As we are at the minute, we're developing a national data resource, you know, a single health and care record in Wales. That is conceived of as a program. But when the program ends, we're not going to turn it off.
It will change.
You still need the whole data platform. So it's a bit artificial to be describing it as a program. And the reason it's sort of described and funded as a program is because that's the way that the public sector works at the minute. And actually, that's the way that some large organizations work too. It's not just the public sector. So I think those are the two big leadership challenges. One is about the workforce and talent and people. And the other is about changing the way that we manage and plan financially for what digital is now becoming, which is not the same as what it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, and I'm mindful of perhaps also lower levels in the hierarchy, not just the chief exec level, but people who are junior managers or kind of early appointments that have got digital potential for digital ideas or recognize opportunities within digital to change processes, to change cultures, or to make things better.
Well, I think there's some really interesting things there. So there's a lot of emphasis on user research, on user-centered design, on user-led digital products. And I often hear from clinicians who've come up with an idea for some new digital product. So their default position is, we need an app for that. And that is not always the answer. Digital is not always the answer. You can do a lot without digital, and it doesn't magically solve things either. But I think it's the technical understanding of what it takes to develop a digital product, which is the thing. Now, it may be that 5 years from now, we'll have a more developed low-code, no-code kind of environment in which people who are less intensively trained are able to develop functional services. And that starts to close the gap between the people who want the product. And you know, and it's really useful and important to have a clinical advocate in the health and social care system. But there's quite a gap between them and the developers and the sort of technical teams that you need. And bringing them together is not as easy as it might be, because they're driven by different priorities.
Yeah, different motivators and speak a different language very often in a different kind of context. What about just on a localized level, your experiences during the pandemic of perhaps examples that you've seen of innovative uses or effective use of digital technology that you've seen that have impacted people on a much more local scale?
So we talked earlier about the proximity tracking app. I think that was really innovative. You know, the way that it uses Bluetooth low energy token exchange, and actually the way that it protects privacy. It is one of the most deeply privacy-proofed apps on any smartphone device. And Google and Apple, who created the Google-Apple exposure notification framework that underpins pretty much all contact tracing apps, put a huge amount of effort into privacy protection. And you know, that's characteristic of Apple, is part of their core brand, is you know, protecting on-device privacy. Really, really clever in the way that it's done these things. Very, very innovative. A whole different debate about how effective it was. It was very functional. How much difference it made, and I think it did make a difference. I think it made a measurable and worthwhile difference. But it was definitely really, really innovative. I think the things that have been effective, above all, video conferencing and online working. So just to give you an idea, in Wales, we had just kicked off an Office 365 deployment program that was planned over 3 years, beginning in 2020. The program team had just been stood up, and it was going to go through a sort of a phased approach of getting Active Directory sorted, and then getting Outlook email sorted, and then OneDrive. And then right at the end of the 3 years, there was this thing called Teams that nobody knew what it was. And then when the pandemic struck, let's turn that on its head. Let's do Teams first. And second, can we speed the whole thing up? So Teams was deployed in 5 weeks flat, from the middle of March to the end of April 2020. The whole program was delivered by the end of 2020 in less than 12 months, in around 10 months. You know, hugely impressive achievement. And all of the pandemic response is everything. You know, the field hospitals, the mass vaccine testing, the mass booking, test booking places, the light test laboratories, all of this was organized using video conferencing. You know, everybody was working from home. Everybody's locked in their homes, and it was lockdown. You know, amazingly effective use of technologies, and there was a lot behind that. You know, we very quickly introduced, you know, lots more remote desktop capability for doctors, lots more VPN servers. You know, there was a global hunt for volume VPN servers. There were people sort of trading them on the black market between large public sector organizations. Bandwidth, we had to step up the bandwidth for all of the core NHS networks very, very significantly to enable all the video that was going over it, video conferencing and video consultation. And I think the testing and the vaccine platforms were also very effective products in Wales, delivered very, very quickly. Effective, measured by hard metrics. So the metric for contact tracing is the proportion of people who you can follow up within 24 hours of notification, and then how many of their primary contacts you can follow up. Wales was consistently above 90%, pretty much all the way through the whole sort of pandemic and use of contact tracing. And we were very, very efficient. So at one point early in 2021, there was a sort of a comparison between the cost model per call of England compared to Wales. And in England, we're using a different model for contact tracing, different technology, different service delivery model. Ours was a partnership between the NHS and local authorities. And the England system was costing four times as much and was generally hitting sort of 70 to 80% follow-up, whereas ours was a quarter of the price and was delivering 90 plus. So, you know, really effective on that measure. And the vaccine delivery service as well in Wales, a single web platform for all our mass vaccination centres and also into all GPs. One instance or one platform actually in common for all of them helped us to be really, really quick and to squeeze more doses out of the vaccine supply that we had, because all countries in the UK had the same amount of vaccine supply, but we were able to manage more tightly because we had real-time data from our platform, and also to fill booking slots more often. So several centres were releasing booking slots at 4 o'clock and then allowing people to come in and fill those, which meant they didn't have to throw any wasted vaccine doses from opened vials away at the end of the day, which meant that we were able to extract more, which is why we were slightly quicker than other parts of the UK in terms of the rollout of the vaccine. So really, really effective use of digital technologies blended with service delivery models.
That's fantastic. Throughout the discussion, you talk about 5 years' time as a measure. I'm curious where you think we'll be in 5 years' time.
Yeah, I mean, 5 years is random. It's not because I know there's something particular that's going to happen in 5 years.
I was waiting for a big announcement then.
3 to 5 years, I think, from a strategy perspective, I think 3 to 5 years is a good sweet spot. If it's longer than 5 years, then you write a strategy with ambitions, but they're so far away that nobody really knuckles down and gets to them until 3 or 4 years have passed. And then it's like, oh, well, we should have started 3 years ago. It's too late now. So let's write another strategy. And then two to three years is too short to get big things done in very large, complex organizations, not just in the public sector, but anyway, yes, you can do digital product, but if you're talking about a major organizational change and a change in the character of your workforce and the skill set, then you know you need a decent time horizon. 5 years from now, I think we will still be recognizably the same sort of system that we are at the minute. It won't be flying cars and robot doctors and any of this kind of stuff in 5 or even in 10 years. But I think there are some things that are working now where we will see they'll be mature products effectively in 5 years. So I think we'll have a whole different view and a much, much richer use case scenario to data across health everywhere. In Wales, I'm hoping we'll be, you know, at the front end of that. We've had a shared care record in Wales for about 5 years already. I think 5 years from now, we'll have a single health and care record that is pulling data through from social care. And we'll be using it for things that we do now, but more effectively. So that we'll be using aggregated population data for research. We'll be using personal data in a more timely and direct way and more comprehensive way for clinical care everywhere. And the thing we'll be doing much more of that we're not doing at the minute, I think, is using, again, aggregate data for planning purposes as management information in the health service. So I think the usage of data will have changed a lot. I think that we'll have much more digital access to services for drugs, for medicines. Medicines should be digitalized across the whole of Wales 5 years from now. And I would hope to see people engaging with and interacting with their prescribing record and understanding the drugs that they have and even getting prompts from devices to take drugs so that we can improve adherence to drug prescriptions and things like that. And I think we'll also see some changes in the technology, which is digitally enabled. We've all become accustomed to self-testing and to management of our own conditions, really. You know, we've sort of people still taking LFT tests and others in the home. I think we'll see more of that enabled by digital technologies. And we'll also see more artificial intelligence applied to support clinical decision making off the back of the better data that we have. So this is more about more precision and more personalized medicine. And there's a bit more in the hands of patients as individuals too. But it's still going to be an in-person business. I think you still go to your GP. You know, you still need face-to-face consultations for diagnostics, for understanding what your diagnosis is, and for deciding with the doctor what to do about it, what the appropriate intervention is. There's still lots and lots of things that will still happen in hospital. And I'm sure there will be lots of things that I can't foresee at the minute. You know, never make predictions, especially not about the future.
And after the experience of the last 2 years, who would fall into that trap again? And I guess in the context of at the heart of all of this is still the element of health and care, isn't there? There's a personal element that's just, it's a different skill set, perhaps, that will change and modify, but it's still the care for the communities and individuals that we're all passionate about within Wales.
It is, absolutely. And I think that there's some really, you know, well, they're not that new anymore, but there's some really good books from guys like Eric Topol. The Patient Will See You Now is a really good book about, you know, how digital enables a shift away from the historic model of intuitive medicine and quite paternalistic medicine, where a doctor, because of their training, usually male, usually intuits, you know, divines, treat the whole patient sort of thing and diagnose the whole patient, where we're going to move towards much, much more accurate and definite, you know, binary diagnoses of things. You know, to the extent, if you look at the COVID example again, we don't just have tests that will identify that you have COVID, which is a specific virus, but we then sequence genetically those viruses post-diagnosis in order to work out exactly what variant it is. And then we can target different treatments at those things. It's far more precise, you know, because it used to be, you know, you'd go to a doctor with flu and it would be like, well, you probably have flu, but, you know, maybe I'll give you antibiotics, maybe I won't. You know, we couldn't even distinguish whether you had a bacterial or a viral infection. Now, for COVID, it's not just confirming that you got viral infection, but exactly what variant of that viral infection. So I think that's a profound change, which we'll see rolling through into other areas. I think it's going to be a decade of med tech. We're going to shift away from the emphasis that we've had on biotech, move towards med tech, so devices, digital and diagnostics is really going to be a lot of the pattern of it. And data is in the mix there under the digital heading. So it's going to be really different. And I think we'll also see more opportunities for family and friends and for patients to support themselves. If you've got chronic conditions or if you've got elderly relatives who are frail or other things, then digital will enable you to do more. The thing that I'm not too sure about is there's a big narrative around Internet of Things, embedded sensors everywhere. The promise of telehealth and telecare has been talked about for 20 years. You know, in the late 90s, people were talking about sensors everywhere that would, you know, passively sense as people were moving around and look for patterns in their behavior, turning on and off the kettle or walking through a given door or, you know, all these kinds of things, and then intelligently alert or escalate monitoring centers. I'm still not sure that is sort of coming through with the speed or the prominence that was expected. And I'm still open-minded as to really whether that kind of Internet of Things, passive sensors, is going to be a major factor in the future. I think really that the personal relationships are absolutely essential and is what care is all about. So I'm not currently bought into this idea of kind of robot carers and robot doctors and robot support for frail elderly people. I don't see that, but I might well be proven completely wrong.
I would agree. I think there has to be a human element, doesn't there? That's what this whole process is about. And whilst we're talking about digital, fundamentally it's about for human needs, and care is at the heart of that. Ivan, that was a fantastic discussion. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks very much, Mark. My pleasure.
Thank you. If you want to hear more from the Change Management podcast, please don't forget to follow. Thanks for listening, and thank you to our guest, Ivan Evans. To find out more about this podcast and our business services at USW, visit southwales.ac.uk/business.